Sox! White Sox! Go, 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 go!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! Chicago is proud of you!
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, good to be talking to you tonight after a winner today, their 16th win on the season. Good evening, jam-packed show for you today. Harry Tynowitz is off. Kevin Powell, fresh off the golf course, looking tan, looking ready to do a two-hour White Sox Weekly, KP.
Did a little 27-hole action today, emergency nine, had to do it. How disappointed are you today? You walk into the studio, it's White Sox Weekly. Normally, your partner in crime is Harry Tynowitz. You walk in, you see me. Got to be a huge letdown.
I'm always excited to see you. You know this, and especially after a 27-hole.
27-hole. Love it. Beautiful. Playing more 18 tomorrow as well.
So you teed off at what time?
Teed off at about a 10:15 action,
and then just roll 27. Was that the plan?
27.
Was that the plan?
Not the plan. But just, well, the plan was to go and be a pay your green fees, and the guy I went to play with ended up knowing the guy who runs the course didn't pay a single penny.
Oh.
And he goes, we go, hey, emergency nine. He goes, feel free. I go, this is beautiful. The course emptied out after like whatever time, one or two, because everyone's probably scurrying off to barbecues and whatnot.
Right.
You may have heard, Carmen, it's beautiful outside.
Yes, it has.
Breaking news.
I hope
everyone is outside. Maybe you're on your porch, a patio situation. Maybe you have a cold beverage. Tuning into WGN. I hope Carmen and I don't put you to sleep. Enjoy the night. We're going to have fun for the next 2 hours.
Right, exactly right. Celebrating a White Sox victory today, especially coming off a loss last night where you're up 4-2 in the eighth, and Ronaldo Lopez pitches great. And you expect to win the game. White Sox bullpen's been very good as of late, and Bruce Rondon's been good all month, but he wasn't last night, giving up three, and that one did not feel good. So to bounce back today, it was nice to see.
Reynaldo Lopez, I talked to some baseball people as the season kind of started. Hey, where do you project Reynaldo Lopez long-term? Because that's really all we're doing right now. It's all these long-term projections, right? A guy has a good game. It's like, oh, well, maybe that can help. Where does this guy fit in? Yada, yada, yada. Ronaldo Lopez, I talked to somebody, said, you know, I think he could be a 4 or 5.
Oh, come on.
And now I'm like, 2 or 3, man. This guy throws strikes. He knows the command. He's got command. He's been the best pitcher on the team so far.
Yeah, without a doubt. And
the person that told me that, I think a lot of people are on board with that. I think some people say Ronaldo Lopez has the best stuff among, like, Fulmer, Giolito, those three. I don't think he does. I think Giolito has the best stuff. Fulmer might even have the best stuff, but Lopez is putting it all together this year.
Well, and Lopez throws the hardest. He has the most command by far.
Command is where he's been dominant. He's not walking people. We've seen Fulmer and Giolito get in trouble there.
He still could command it even better, though. There's an upside there where I think he's really just touching what he can do. We'll see. I mean, where it all spins out in a couple years down the road when we do White Sox Weekly again here. But look, I don't know. 1, 2, 3. I don't look at him as a back end guy. That's for sure.
Are the Sox going to give a shot in the offseason or what?
I don't know. What do you think? I'll
say this, that everyone's dismissing the White Sox, that Machado, you're going to pay $200 million, you're going to pay $300 million. I get that. I get all that.
I think they'll pay the money.
But I'm not 100%, Carmen. I'm with you there. I'm not necessarily. Do I think they're going to get Machado? I wouldn't bet on. Let's say it's 10, 15, 20% chance he comes here.
Okay.
Let's factor everything into the equation. One, who else is going to sign him? Yankees aren't going to sign him.
Well,
they have Torres. They have Didi. They're fine there. Maybe Boston. So, yeah, like you could put this price tag on him. The point I guess I'm getting at is that Rick Hahn, when they did this rebuild and it started, Rick Hahn has continued to state that, yes, when the time is right, we will spend money. We will go get free agents. I continue to like equate it to the John Lester signing for the Cubs. I was talking about this with Dan Long, producer Dan Long, before the show. That was the moment the Cubs, like, that was, hey, everybody else, you're on notice. We're ready to compete. We just signed the best pitcher with the best free agent pitcher. That's when you turn the corner is when you start buying free agents. Now, this talk that, well, it's too early for Machado, you're not signing it for a one-year deal. You're signing it for an 8 or 10 year deal. That's a franchise-altering type deal. So I just think that people are being a little bit dismissive when it comes to the Machado White Sox stuff. I guarantee you they will be right there in the thick of things when it comes to Machado.
Well, and you compare it to the Cubs signing of John Lester. John Lester and Theo Epstein had a relationship.
And Theo still had to fight for him.
Sure.
He had to pry Lester from a lot of people.
But he really wanted him, and that relationship was built. Now Manny Machado, for me, he's going to be a free agent at 26 years old, one of the best players in baseball.
Rarity. That almost never happens.
Right. He is going, I don't know who's going to be stepping up, but teams are going to be stepping up, and they're going to pay Manny Machado.
That's why I'm really looking forward to talking to James Fegan from The Athletic today, because he's got a good grasp on all the Sox stuff, and that's specifically what I want to ask him. If not the Sox, where?
And James also has been traveling with the White Sox minor league system, so he saw Dylan Cease in person. He has thoughts on Jordan Stevens, who's pitching in AAA tonight. He has thoughts about what the White Sox are doing at all levels. So he's a great guy to have on tonight at 8. We're going to have Charlie Tilson on at 7:35. I talked to Charlie.
Well, that guy.
Yep. I talked to him earlier today. KPA was going to tell you to come on in and speak with him, but I knew that you'd be doing something and you were on the golf course.
27 living. Holes. I'm sorry, Carm. Right. I couldn't make it.
And then Jace Fry will be with us at 8:35 tonight. So a very busy show. Coming up next, we're going to... Steve Stone was on the Steve Cochran show earlier this week, as in yesterday. And he had some very interesting things to say about Lucas Giolito and what's going on there. Giolito's start obviously was a rough one. And also some thoughts on Wellington Castillo, who the White Sox lost for 80 games today, 80 games this week, suspended for PED use. So Steve, with some interesting thoughts, we'll play that coming right back here. And Sox fans, remind us, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Milwaukee Brewers Saturday, June the 2nd at 1:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans receive a replica 1983 road jersey. It's presented by Xfinity, the fastest internet in Chicago. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME.
And entertain your group of MVPs in a suite this season. White Sox Suites offer the best experience and value. Single game suites start as low as $2,000. For more information, call 312-674-1000. You ever been in a suite at a Sox game?
It's unbelievable.
Incredible. It's beautiful. Sometimes we have a suite sometimes for WGN, and I always just kind of walk over there and eat all the food, and then I leave. And I don't even say hi to everybody. I just go in, I eat the food, and I'm out.
It's impressive that they let you do that.
312-674-1000 or visit whitesox.com.
Coming on back with Steve Stone, talking some PED and also a little Lucas Giolito. That's straight ahead, 720 WGN White Sox Weekly. Hey, bring your family to a White Sox game for as low as $49. Our family four-pack includes four tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas. Upper-level and lower-level packages available. Check out all of the available dates at whitesox.com/four-packs today. That's a hell of a deal.
Did two hot dogs on the course today, Carm.
Mustard?
Mustard, onion. Actually, the course we were playing, one of the tee boxes is a big fence, and it's all, you know, bushes and stuff, and it's covered. But behind that, there's a little alley, and there's a strip mall, and there's a hot dog stand. Mm-hmm. My buddy knows the owner. He hands over the fence a bag full of hot dogs today. How incredible is that?
You're really living a great day. Didn't golf, didn't pay, hot dogs,
I didn't pay for anything today. I'm playing golf tomorrow. I'm not going to pay.
You're living a good life over there.
I'm living a great life. I got no complaints. Zero complaints, Carm.
You go to Guaranteed Rate Field, what, let's call it 70 times a year, KP?
Yeah, 50-ish.
Okay, let's call it whatever. Say 50. Of those 50 times, how many times do you have a hot dog?
49.
So you're a daily dog.
Because you know how they do the press box at Sox.
Right, it's free hot dogs.
And the third inning comes around.
So you're never saying no.
Nah. You know, sometimes they spoil us with stuff. Like the other day they brought this full platter of like sub sandwiches and stuff, and I ate all that. But then the third inning rolled around.
And then
sometimes, if we're lucky, they bring pulled sausages.
Yep, that's a win. All right, here, Steve Stone was on the Steve Cochran show on Friday. And we started out with him. I was in for Dave Ennett on Friday. So we started out talking about Lucas Giolito and what he was saying. This was the day after Giolito did not have it against the Baltimore Orioles at Guaranteed Rate Field. And so we started talking about command.
Lucas Giolito, good kid. Like the future, but you got to go longer than 1 1/3.
He's had a hard time spotting his fastball for whatever reason. And I think a lot of it has to do with being 6'7". You have to have a repeatable motion to be able to do that. And he's been flying off the mound to the left side. I don't know if that's exactly a product of trying to get more on his fastball. He's down probably 3 miles an hour from last year, and he insists that he's entirely healthy. And if he is healthy, it has to be a mechanical problem. And I think that's one of the reasons why the location of his fastball is not quite what it should be. If you can't locate your fastball, you're going to have a hard time getting anything else over the plate. And we've seen it a whole lot where he drags the ball, takes it with him, falls off the mound to his left side, and throws it well wide of the plate. He leads the team in wild pitches. I think he's got six or seven of them. And when you watch him, it looks like he's always fighting his control. The last time out, he was able to throw 12 called strikes with his fastball. And that's a whole different scenario from what we've seen on occasion from him. So hopefully he gets this worked out, because he obviously cannot pitch the way he's doing. And, you know, Don Cooper is the best in the business at flaw picking, which is finding out what a guy does wrong. Talk to him a little bit about fixing it one way or the other. And sometimes it's shortening your stride if the breaking ball is not doing it well. Sometimes it's lengthening your stride. And at 6'7", again, a repeatable motion is essential. He's having a hard time doing that. He did it last year for 7 starts. He did it in spring training. There's no reason to assume he can't do it now. But I think he realizes that he's down in velocity, maybe trying to get a little extra on it, which means his body gets out of control. And there's a number of other things. Don Cooper wants guys to stand tall, meaning stay upright. Sometimes if you do push off with your back leg and spring at the hitter, you can stay close a little bit longer, and that's really the case. It's really the case with most pitchers. I don't think that's his problem. I think he's able to do that, but I think it's a mechanical difficulty that I assume he's going to work out, but he better work it out sooner rather than later.
So there you go. We got a mechanical issue, and he's got 37 walks right now, which is tops in the American League. That's a stat. Obviously, you don't want to be leading the American League in 37 walks. He struck out 27, and the ERA sitting at 7.53.
The good news is that Lucas Giolito is so in tune with his mechanics that when he is off the mark in that regard, I think when he goes back, he knows what he did wrong. He knows what he did right. So I have faith in Lucas Giolito. I have trusted him that he can identify what he is doing wrong and then fix it. He's a very smart guy.
Right. Okay. And so
he's very mechanical.
He's a smart guy. He's an introspective guy. He's a talented guy. But is it best for him to figure this out in the major?
I don't think so.
And you think he should go down?
Yeah. Oh, no. I thought you were going to say, is it best for him to stay in the... Yeah, he should stay in the majors. Okay. I think it's a different... We asked Ricky Renteria about this the other day. It was after his rough outing. It was, okay, well, is that in the cards similar to what Carson? And Renteria said, no, it's not. And,
right.
And I think what that tells you is that I think the White Sox have what I just said. I think they have that similar belief that, okay, he can figure out its mechanics. I think for Carson Fulmer, has to be a little bit more in tune with his mechanics. I think Carson Fulmer has so much talent that he goes out there and he kind of leans on that a little bit rather than actual mechanics. We've asked him and he's just like, you know, I kind of go out there and just pitch. I think he has to actually take a step back and be like, okay, let's reevaluate the mechanics of this whole thing.
Right. So here, let's hear what Stone said about Lucas going down, because, you know, Ricky, he's never going to be out in front of that and tell us that right after the game, because as he shouldn't.
But I actually believe him in that regard.
No, I don't see that. I'm not saying he's lying. I'm saying that if he continues to struggle, at some point you might have to do it. That time doesn't seem to be now. Here with Steve is whether Lucas should be working this out of the big leagues or at AAA.
Would you have him work it out in the big leagues, or would you send him down to AAA? It seems like they don't want to do that right now, but if it was your call, what would you do?
Well, he's had 4 good games out of his starts. Right now, I wouldn't send him down. They already sent down 1 in Carson Fulmer. You don't want to have your major league rotation starting in AAA if you can help it. For Carson Fulmer, it was a non-debatable issue because he was having a hard time stringing together any type of success. And before his confidence was ruined, they decided to send him down and try to work on a few things with him. It's a different problem with him. He has a tendency to rush. He has a tendency to hurry up the motion, not necessarily rush it entirely, but it's a very fast motion, and he also is not able to repeat it at all. Also, I believe he's looking at the wrong release point. I think because his ball moves so much, he's probably going to go down there thinking about throwing the ball down the middle and letting the natural movement of the fastball take it to a corner. He was aiming at the outside corner because we saw both of the catchers setting up on the outer third, maybe the outside corner at times. His ball moves too much to be able to pinpoint that particular area. And so I think it's just a visual adjustment with him and slowing down his motion. I think he's got good enough stuff to pitch in the major leagues, but the jury is still out if he's bullpen best or if he fits in the starting rotation. Bear in mind, there's a lot of really talented guys coming up to the major leagues in the next year, year and a half. And then eventually, you're going to have to pick your best five. And with Carlos Rodon throwing as well as he has, however, he did get hit in the head with a line drive yesterday in his performance. So I think he's going to be okay, but that stopped his rehab start at 2 2/3 innings. And, again, I think he's going to be okay. The time before, he threw very well. He's going to come back. He's going to get a spot in the rotation. Lopez has got a spot in the rotation. So we'll see exactly how this plays out. But it's going to get very competitive. And these young pitchers have to work out their difficulties because the competition is going to be so intense for the starting rotation. And these guys all want to be starters. So, again, the jury is out on these guys.
Yep, no doubt about it. You got Rodon, you've got Cease, you've got Lopez, you've got Kopech, you've got Giolito, you've got Fulmer who wants to start. I mean, the list is starting to get long. You don't know, you might dip into the free agent pool to get a veteran.
They will eventually.
Right. I mean, James Shields is going to be gone at the end of the year, and he pitches tomorrow, by the way, and I talked to James, he'll be on the pregame show tomorrow. You know, there's a lot of moving parts here. So, he talked a lot about Carson Fulmer there. As to why he's looking to do at AAA, but right now they're keeping Giolito up here.
Yeah, I think the thing to keep in mind here is that we are in the infancy stages of this rebuild.
Yep,
you know it is so early in this whole thing. I mean, the starting staff outlook in just a year. You and I talking this time, 2019, it could be so much different because certain guys will emerge, certain guys may not hit. The bottom line is, keep gathering a giant pool of talent. Some of them will surface. Some of them will be good pitchers, positionally and for pitchers.
And on a very micro level here, it'd be great to see Giolito start to work his way back.
Consistency.
Right.
Because we've seen him pitch well. It's just, I think, on the consistency level is what we're looking for.
Join us Friday, June 1st for Rock and Roll Night in Fireworks
Danny
Present.
Farquhar will be there that night on the first pitch. That'll be a good one.
Lucas Giolito wants to catch that first pitch. He's been out there for a lot of first pitches.
He's a big first pitch guy.
He's a huge first pitch guy. It's presented by Guaranteed Rate, those fireworks, as the White Sox host the Milwaukee Brewers, 7:10 p.m. You can purchase those tickets by visiting whitesox.com. Coming up after 7:30, Charlie Tilson, the local product, playing some outfield for the White Sox, got in his third game today as a defensive replacement, started the two games before that. Great kid. We'll talk to him right after 7:30 on 720 WGN.
Oh, great song, Downtown Danny Long.
Little wannabe starting something. I'm hip, I know. I know my Michael Jackson. White Sox Weekly, hope you're having a great Saturday night. Mark Carman, Kevin Powell with
you. Can we do the show outside, Carm? Can we make that happen? Can we just go out there and just do the show from Michigan Avenue?
You know, it's funny. I had a little meeting yesterday afternoon. And
meetings are never good. Huge anti-meeting guy. What was the meeting about?
Right. Didn't want to go to the meeting.
Meetings are horrible. Nothing ever gets done.
Walked in there. I'm like, what? Can we do this meeting outside?
And the meeting could always be condensed to about 5 minutes and it lasts an hour.
The meeting, we jumped right into an outsider.
It changed. My job interview for here happened right there in Pioneer Court. It lasted about 2 minutes. Got the job. Boom. Here I am.
2 minutes?
Sox Weekly.
That's the type of impact you make, like a great piece of chocolate. You don't need a whole Three Musketeers for you. You're like a high quality.
Three Musketeer, no good.
Right. You're a high quality chocolate.
Like a Snickers?
Well, no, I'm going like upper
like
level.
Real, like high level chocolate stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is it? A Gardelli? What do they call it? Something along those lines. Hey, we put out our text question, which is, what is your favorite thing to eat at Guaranteed Rate Field? 312-981-7200. I go with the elotes.
Elotes are amazing, Carmen. But you're making me upset here because anybody who's a White Sox fan, if you go to Guaranteed Rate, you get yourself a Polish sausage with onions, a little bit of mustard. I always ask for Polish with extra, meaning extra onions, and I almost eat the onions. Playing 708s with me, Polish sausage with onions are amazing. 708, text me the name. If I ever see you at a Sox game, I'll buy you a Polish sausage. We'll enjoy that together. There's nothing better. I want, you know how Yankee Candle has candles for everything? They have like bacon flavored scent and blah, blah, blah. I want a Polish sausage with onions from Sox Park, candle. Oh. So in the off season, when I'm craving a Polish sausage with onions, I can light it in my family room while it's snowing, and I can smell Polish sausage and onions.
I got nothing against the Polish sausage, although I do probably prefer the hot dog with onions over the Polish.
Yeah, you're upsetting Sox fans right now.
No, I'm clearly upset at you, but
you're upsetting me.
But I think there's a lot of Sox fans that would come with me on the hot dog and onions. Nobody would come with me.
There would be fans, but not a lot of them. 90% of Sox fans would agree with me that the Polish sausage is the way to go.
Do you have a particular stand where you like to get your Polish?
Just on the 100 level, They got the pro grill men out there.
Polish sausage or elotes, 312.
Elotes is awesome. Elote. They got them out in center field.
You can get listen, the hot dogs at Guarantee Refill are incredible.
Well, they're great.
But you don't
go onion on your hot dog?
Of course. Okay. You don't get the elotes everywhere in the world.
No. So, and then it's the real deal. Like the girl takes the corn out. She cuts it up. She makes it right in front of you.
The butter, the paprika, whatever. It's a delicious
lime,
little one.
Beautiful.
All right, let's bring in our guy, Charlie Tilson. And what did you have up on your wall growing up here, KP?
I think I had like 3 Michael Jordan posters, and I think I had a Frank Thomas bobblehead on my nightstand.
That's a tremendous look right there. I went with my first ever poster was the Orlando Woolridge giveaway Puma poster. It was my favorite Bull. It was a Puma, the shoe. That's what he wore.
Oh, okay.
And then I segued into segued into Mike. Goat.
Had Jordan on your ceiling, right? So every night when you lay your head on your pillow, you look up at Mike.
You know what? I hadn't been through like deep into my drawers recently. I found like my old school Bulls shorts that I used to wear all the time.
That's amazing.
They're back out. I'm wearing them this summer.
Awesome.
But so Charlie Tilson grew up a Chicago White Sox fan, and now he's playing for the White Sox. Who gets to live that dream? That is ridiculous. So Charlie, we start the conversation here. What did he have up on his wall growing up as a Sox fan?
You know, I got to be honest with you. My guy was Scott Podsednik growing up. I mean, just the way he played, it was such a perfect person for me to emulate. You know, I think I was 12 years old that year in 2005. And, I mean, just watching what he was able to do, he's so dynamic, you know, whether it was bunting or slashing and watching him on defense. I mean, he was a perfect guy for me at that time. So really idolized him.
I mean, it's really not a bad guy for you right now, right? I mean, do you sort of see yourself in that mold where I'm a left-handed hitter, I'm super fast, I can play anywhere in the outfield, and I can help the ball club in, you know, a variety of ways?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I understand speed's my biggest asset, and, you know, for me, my job is just to get on base and let these big guys get me in. So he's definitely a guy I want to emulate. I mean, he was an any-way-on type of player. Obviously, his defense was pretty incredible too. So yeah, I would say 100%.
See, and I liked it last night. You had that little squibber where you get on and you're super excited about it. Some guys, they don't hit a line drive 100 miles an hour and it lands. Maybe they're a little disappointed. From my standpoint, it's like that's exactly what you want. Hey, I am on. That's a base hit in the books. Right?
That's right. Hey, I learned early on in my career that they all count. So I'll take them any way they come, no doubt.
Yeah. So all right, let's talk about this journey. You get drafted by the Cardinals. Did you grow up like really like hating the Cubs? Were you a Cubs? I've read that, but like, what level are we talking about?
You know, when I was really young, I did go to Wrigley Field and I kind of rooted for both teams. But as I got older, my older brother became a big Ken Griffey Jr. fan, big White Sox fan. Obviously, that home run race in 1998, we were kind of on Team Griffey. So I think that's kind of when we started rooting against the Cubs, and then as the White Sox really started to develop a strong team in 2005, that's when, you know, our fandom really took off. And obviously there was those crosstown classic games, AJ Pierzynski and Michael Barrett exchanging blows. I mean, I think, you know, at that time it was really one side or the other. So I'll be honest, I was very far from a Cubs fan. And, you know, I don't like to use the word hate, but it wasn't my squad growing up, that's for sure.
Well, it's sports hate. It's not real hate. We all know that this...
Exactly.
I mean, this is... At least I hope we all know that this is the toy department. We're all having fun. It's not, you know, there's...
Absolutely.
Right. So, okay. And so, again, outsider looking in, you get drafted by the Cardinals. You know, you get $1 million-plus signing bonus. You start moving your way up through the organization. You're at AAA. You get traded to your hometown team, which is, I mean, that's just nuts. And then you're in the big leagues and you end up getting hurt. It's like looking at your situation, like you maybe never had to handle something like that because things were just, you know, kept on sort of going your way. Is that accurate, or were you more prepared for the adversity than one would think?
Yeah, you know, I think this game kind of breeds adversity. Never went through anything of that magnitude. I mean, you know, not only being a Sox fan growing up and having that opportunity, it was incredible. But you know, I had been loosely attached to the organization throughout my career, playing in the area code games. A White Sox scout, Dan Durst, kind of took care of me my junior and senior year of high school and flew out to California with me. And that's what really put me on the map. So it was crazy because I really, you know, you play for 5 or 6 years in the minor leagues, and I didn't play against many White Sox affiliates, and you don't really hear much from them. But I guess it's just a classic lesson of you never know who's watching. And, you know, when I got that phone call, you know, it just seemed like it all made sense. And, you know, having to deal with that adversity, especially right off the bat, is pretty unbelievable. But, you know, when you have an opportunity like this, and I remember sitting here in Detroit, you know, after that it all happened, and just realizing that, you know, I was still very fortunate, and that, you know, the only thing, the best thing I could do for myself and the best thing I could do for this team is just to try to get back on the field and do everything I can. Unfortunately, obviously, it took a long time, but, you know, here I am, and the opportunity means the world to me.
And so, you know, last year, you're talking about pushing yourself so hard to get back. You had a stress reaction in your right foot, and then you ended up having a stress fracture in your right ankle. And I think you've said that you maybe were pushing yourself so hard to get back that you possibly, you know, kept yourself out longer. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard to say. You know, that type of injury is really frustrating because there's no warning signals leading up to it. It's just, you know, right before spring training, I felt this sensation in my foot, and it was just already too late to be able to do anything about it. So, you know, I don't know if I necessarily pushed myself too far or if it was just the magnitude of the hamstring injury. And just one of those things, you know, it's unfortunate, but you got to deal with it. And, you know, fortunately, I kind of found a way to work through it and get back on the field and be able to be out here consistently.
Yeah, a lot of Sox fans have been rooting for you to be out there. I know you've obviously desperately wanted it. You know, I do the post-game show, Charlie, so every night in one of our segments we go through the minor leagues, and I was just been paying attention to you every game to see what's going on because I figured you'd be up at some point. And you started out the year slow, and I'm wondering, wow, is this opportunity not going to come from? And then the night before you got called up, you go 3 for 5, and the batting average is ticking up. Did you have a sense that it was coming for you?
Yeah, you know, it was starting to click. I got off to a little bit of a slow start. I think, you know, spring training, I was feeling really good. Obviously, the season's an adjustment. There's a lot more scouting that goes into it. So I had some adjustments I needed to make. You know, fortunately, Gruz and Tomby are down there. They helped me out a ton. I really felt like in the last 2-3 weeks, I was starting to hit a stride. You know, my at-bats were more consistent. You know, you try to stay in the moment, especially down there, and just try to get the most out of every day. Obviously, I'm aware that, you know, I could be the next guy up. So it's something you want to stay ready for. But, yeah, it couldn't have come at a better time. I felt great that night, and just trying to carry that momentum into here.
And again, congratulations. I want to rewind back a little bit here. How fast are you, by the way? Did you run track in high school? I mean, I'm watching you. I'm like, that dude is quick.
I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, it's always been an attribute for me. It took a little bit for me to get it back after that injury, but I felt great. I mean, you know, I was out in the fall league, and you know, that was kind of an acclimation period for me. But being able to go back home and really pick it up and work on that speed, I felt like it's come back pretty well. I'll tell you, I wasn't fast enough to beat that Scott Podsednik billboard in the fundamental zone when I was a kid, but I'm close.
That's one of the great things you could do going out to a guaranteed right field is go a little fundamentals, get a little sprint in, then you come down, you can eat a big hot dog, you can watch Charlie Tilson play baseball.
you talked about how the White Sox, you had the scout that was looking out for you. I heard a story where, I guess, in one of those camps, you hit a huge home run that, you know, a 400-some-odd-foot bomb that really put you on the radar. Is that accurate where, oh, this guy's really fast and he's super skilled? Oh, and look, there's some power, too.
Yeah, that was a huge moment for me. I mean, I remember sitting on the flight flying out to California, and, you know, being from Chicago, you hear so much about the baseball in Texas or the baseball out in California and Nevada, and for me, I couldn't wait to find out. I remember sitting next to Dan Durst, and he's, you know, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to talk with him, but he's a pretty fiery personality, and he just told me, hey, you're just as good as any of these guys, and you got to believe in yourself, and you got to go out there and just, you know, play your butt off and try to steal as many bases as you can. I remember night one, I got a base hit, my first at bat, and he's looking at me like, you better run. I stole second, I stole third, and I just kind of carried that momentum throughout the weekend, and fortunately was able to connect on that ball, and I traveled home, and my life had changed, man. I went from being a kid from the Midwest, kind of recruited mostly by Big Ten schools, to being on draft boards and hearing from just about every school around the country.
Yeah, it's just something to consider, because, you know, you're growing up here, you're going to Nutrier. Most guys from the northern suburbs, and I grew up in Highland Park, I say this, you know, and not at a haze than anyone, but, like, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit more of a privileged lifestyle there, and maybe there's not as much drive or whatever. You just don't see it as much, and there's the exposure part. So I'm just curious, like, where was your drive coming from? Like, hey, you know, I don't have to, like, fight to put food on the table, but I really, really, really want this. I want to be a professional baseball player.
Yeah, I mean, I love the game. I mean, and I feel like I had so many coaches and my parents kind of pour into me from a young age and you know, let me chase this dream. That I owe it to them, and I owe it to guys like Dan Durst to get out here and you know, like I said, play my butt off. And I think for me, it comes from within. I mean, I want to be out here and I want to showcase what I can do. And I just want to continue to play the game for as long as I can and play it hard.
How many family members did you have out at Guaranteed Rate Field on Wednesday?
I had quite a few. Well, I had my parents and my younger brother and my younger sister out there, but news must have traveled fast, because as I took the field, I kept hearing my name left and right, whether it was out in the bleachers or down the line. I had my high school coach was out there, and he was wearing my Arizona Fall League jersey that I gifted him a few years back at Cardinals, number 22, which was pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean, it was an incredible moment. I mean, just going out the stretch, I remember running out to center field and you kind of turn around and you look at the park. And for me, I just kind of flash back to so many moments as a kid. And, you know, I have butterflies now thinking about it, but I was just kind of overwhelmed. Pretty incredible moment, man. I feel so thankful.
Great stuff, Charlie. Appreciate it. You can follow Charlie on Instagram, Tilson4, on Twitter, at Tilson4, same stuff. And did you make the shoot the puck? I was going through your Instagram. I want to know.
I did not make the shoot the puck. I couldn't believe it. This offseason, I saw Nicky Delmonico hit the shot and had the celebration. It was like, dude, he showed me up big time, man. Got to give it to him. The guy, he's got a knack for they're taking advantage of the moment. I mean, he's a rock star. So, Nicky D got it done.
Well, I'm sure with your connections, you can get another shot at that. But the Blackhawks are on WGN Radio, too. So, if you need me to make a call to John McDonough or whoever, at least one more shot at it, right?
I need at least one more shot, no doubt. I was close for sure. So, maybe one more chance.
You didn't play hockey growing up, did you?
I did not play hockey.
Okay, that would have made it worse. So, as long as, you know, that's... That would have been a choke job then, or at least, well, that's a little harsh, but all right.
Yeah.
Charlie, thanks for the time. Really appreciate you being on White Sox Weekly, and looking forward to watching you. Wishing you a ton of success.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
So there you go, Charlie Tilson, a guy that I am rooting for, KP. I hope.
Same, yeah. Had a couple conversations during spring training, got to know him a little bit. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are pulling for him.
Yeah, so we'll see if the local guy can keep her rolling. Let's take a quick time out here. We'll
give you some of your text response here on our text question of the day. The best food at Guaranteed Rate Field. And coming up after 8 o'clock, James Fegan will be with us, who covers the White Sox for The Athletic. And then at 8:35, Jace Fry, KPU, sat down with him. So we'll do that all straight ahead here, taking you till 9 on 720 WGN. It's White Sox Weekly. Charlie Tilson had Scott Podsednik up on his wall.
Scotty Pods. That old 5 team, man. Pods would get on. Noguchi'd get him over, and Podsednik would steal multiple bases in the process.
I love when Tadahito gets mentioned. 6'3", I had Farrah Fawcett on my wall. Dr. J was my childhood poster. My favorite thing to eat at... Look at what's going on. A lot of Polish sausages going on here, KP.
By the way, Noguchi, you know, in the press box, they have all these like news clippings that have been turned into posters and kind of artwork on the walls. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
White Sox press box. So anyways, the other day I'm reading one. It's an article from, I think it was in USA Today, but it was about Noguchi, and it was about how there's apparently like a fairly large Korean community in, he's Korean, right? Korean or Japanese, whatever it may have been, in Schaumburg. And like he looked in the map. He's like, oh, Schaumburg's like, you know, 30 minutes from Sox Park. He was looking at the map, and he goes, that seems like a nice area to stay. And he got a house in Schaumburg, and then he realized quickly, oh, I got to get from Schaumburg to 35th and Shields every day? Probably not going to work.
Tokyo, Japan, Tadahito.
Japan, my apologies, Tadahito Noguchi.
It's all right.
2005 World Series champion. Schaumburg, not good for a White Sox player, I'll just say that.
No, not at all.
Great, you got Woodfield over there, there's a couple of Portillo's in the area. But if you got to get down to Sox Park, probably not the best spot to live.
Getting the text here, barbecue brisket at the Guaranteed Rate. You ever have the barbecue brisket? That's an upper level move right there with a barbecue brisket.
I feel like an amateur now. I'm the food guy. I never had it there.
Well,
they do a great, the Comiskey burger. Oh, they put the Merck's cheddar on it with a little cheddar.
They have the Merck's cheddar?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. One of my favorite things at Sox Park is it's like Italian beef. They throw it on the flat top. Then the guy puts a spoonful of Merck's cheddar.
On the beef?
On the beef, on the flat top, mixes the beef and the... What do you mean? It's a cheesy beef. So it's like a Philly cheesesteak. Like, it's... What do you mean?
I'm not a cheesy beef guy. I like my beef dipped, hot and sweet. No cheese, man.
But anyways, this is like their own
the beef.
Certain kind of like sandwich. They throw the beef on, they throw the cheese, they mix it up, it all melts, it's all juicy and delicious, and they put a little giardiniera in there, throw it on a bun. Amazing.
Best food at Guaranteed Rate Field, White Sox Weekly. Mike, what's up, man? What's your favorite cuisine?
Oh, my favorite food by far is the combo beef sausage with peppers and mozzarella cheese on top, baby.
Mike gets it.
Where do you get that, Mike, at the Rate?
Right in the right corner field, you know, the skybox there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. All right. I trust you, Mike. That's a good go.
I like it. You got a 2-seed there, Mike? What else you go with?
I get fries. I get curly fries.
Oh, the curly fries. Yeah. I'm with you.
You coming out for the Brewers series, Mike?
I'm coming out, brother.
All right.
Be there, Mike. I'll buy you a Polish sausage. We'll get some sausages.
I'm coming out. I'm going to be there, and I'm going to wear my beanie cap.
There you go. See you, Mike. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike. Love Mike. I want to hang out with Mike.
Mike's a wild man. Danny Farquhar throwing out the first pitch this coming Friday at Guaranteed Rate Field.
It'll be
a sweet scene. All right. We'll get you ready for the 8 o'clock hour. James Fegan from The Athletic will be with us here on White Sox Weekly. He's been taking a trip around the White Sox minor leagues, got a lot of good stuff on Dylan Cease. We'll looking forward to hearing what he has to say about one of the top prospects for the White Sox. That is next, 720 WGN, White Sox Weekly.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly continuing. If you are not reading The Athletic, shame on you. If you're not,
going to ask James what his favorite thing to eat at Guaranteed Rate Field is, because we've been asking everybody here on White Sox Weekly, what is your favorite thing to eat at Guaranteed Rate Field? James, do you have a favorite? Do you have a go-to?
Sandwich my wife made for me 3 hours ahead of time.
Oh, come on.
Smart man. Bring the,
Is that because of health, or is that a financial decision? What are we talking about here?
Okay, my favorite place to eat is probably the sandwiches around the
by the Xfinity thing?
Right field line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the turkey
there
sandwich.
It's
good stuff. They carve it right there in front of you.
James Fegan.
Yeah, they put guacamole and everything. It's great.
Oh, yeah. James Feegan, The Athletic, with us here on White Sox Weekly. And lot to talk about here, James. You've been all over the country watching these White Sox play baseball and going down to the minor leagues. So I loved your piece on Omar Vizquel, because I feel like people are not even realizing that Omar's there, and it's a guy that's just so much respect throughout the game, and then you go down and hang with him, and he's better than advertised. You sort of, it seems like you fell in love with an Omar leading that team.
Yeah, I mean, he's a blast. He's a riot. it seems like he's having a lot of fun doing it, even though, you know, you kind of think, like, it's probably a step down for him or not what he's expecting, seeing as he's interviewing for major league jobs and was an assistant in the majors the last 5 years. You know, it kind of seems weird to see guys get jobs out of experience, and Omar Vizquel, someone who has as much name value as him, who's bilingual, who offers the same, you know, dynamic as Ricky as far as being able to talk to Latin players and, you know, has real coaching experience, that he had to take an A-ball job, but he has a lot of energy for it.
So, and the players, seems like they respect what Omar's doing. They love seeing him on the field. He's still taking ground balls, all that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any 21-year-old player who's going to be saying disparaging things about his manager in interviews like that.
That's true.
But all of them have seemed pretty enthusiastic about it. You know, some of them seem relatively aware of who he was. I don't know if I'd count Luis Robert on that list, seeing as Vizquel said he didn't know who Roberto Clemente was. But it seems like they're pretty enthusiastic. Mike Rodolfo sung his praises pretty well. So, yeah, they definitely seem enthusiastic. As far as, like, you know, having Luis Posabe and Joel Booker, guys who are speed-oriented and love stealing bases, Vizquel kind of leads them, lets them go off to the races, so I think they're pretty happy about that.
James, nobody's as dialed into the White Sox as you are. I feel like I could pluck your brain on a whole variety of White Sox topics. I'm going to go with Carson Fulmer with my first question. He made a start with Charlotte, 5 innings, still had 6 walks. I guess this is, you know, Carm and I were kind of joking at the top of the show that basically most of the White Sox talk these days is projections, right? It's long-term. Where does this guy fit? Where does this guy fit? Where does this guy fit? So to you, where does Carson Fulmer fit? Is he a bullpen guy? Is he a potential starter? What have you seen from him? What do you think White Sox fans can expect to see from Carson Fulmer moving forward?
I've thought probably before the season even that he was probably best off in the bullpen. That seems like an opportunity from the play up, and also for you to be able to, you know, minimize his mistakes. People kind of who are really down on Carson will say to me, is like, well, you have to throw strikes out of the bullpen. Why is he going to be better there? Well, you know, if Carson comes out and he doesn't have it, he's missing his spots, you can pull him and it doesn't throw off your entire day, is basically where I think the bullpen is probably better for him. You know, he'll come out some nights in the first inning and he's 94, 95 while throwing a really hard cutter that's like 80, 89. I think if he's doing that in one inning, two inning spurts, he can probably be really dynamic and effective at times. I don't know. You know, right now he's out there to basically straighten up his line to the plate and swing his leg out less and, you know, try to focus on improving his control. I don't know how much he's ever going to be able to rein that in on a permanent level. I don't see really any harm the White Sox, you know, trying to squeeze that out of him and trying to continue to commit to him as a starter for, you know, as long as they want. I mean, it's not like the 2018 bullpen is going to, you know, call for immediate help and you're going to save the season and go to the playoffs. So what's the harm in working as a starter? And it also gets more reps because, as they've mentioned many times, Nate Jones worked as a starter, you know, for years in the minor leagues. And even watching Nate Jones now, you can see, like, that was probably never a realistic plan for him. So there's no real harm in it, but it always seems like his stuff is lively enough that you would give relieving a chance, even if the control is never going to be top-notch.
What are you seeing from Lucas Giolito? And, you know, we had Steve Stone on Steve Cochran's show yesterday, and I was asking him about whether he thought it'd be better for him to work out his stuff at AAA, similar to what they're doing with Fulmer. And I know Ricky talked about that earlier in the week, that, you know, that's not in the plans right now. I mean, how do you think they'll go forward with Lucas? And when you go, like, deep inside everything that's going on, what's your breakdown of why Giolito's struggling, at least at times, the way he is?
He just doesn't seem like his delivery was in sync like it was near the end of last season or in spring training. I mean, in spring training, he was a 95 on the gun and, you know, could reel off his slider and curveball as sharply as, you know, you'd ever seen him in a White Sox uniform, so it's hard to really kind of figure out why that went away so quickly, but it's not there at the point. He really can't command his fastball to a degree to set himself up for that, to really even get his curveball, you know, working. he mentioned that he feels like his slider is almost a stabilizing pitch. It gets him in the right arm slot. So that's been somewhat reliable so far this season, but right now he just doesn't have any kind of command to really set up what he does well. And he has this great arsenal of off-speed pitches, but he really just can't put himself in the counts to use it. So, yeah, I could see, AAA being a good situation where it's just a lower stress to kind of work on that and set that up. They don't really have, until they really allow themselves to use Kopech or use even Jordan Stevens or in Carlos Rodon, they don't really have the bodies to kind of lose a starter right now. So it might be another couple of weeks, given the fact that he's shown more ability than Fulmer to kind of, grind his way through starts where he doesn't look great or he's not executing great, but still gives him six innings. So I would think it'd be another week of trying him out and seeing if he can stabilize before they would make that kind of decision. I definitely don't think they want to do it. I think they would rather just, stick to the troubles of the major league level and not send him up and down. But at the point where Rodon is healthy and if Kopech is nearing the point where they feel appropriate to call him up, whether for Super 2 reasons or actual improvement reasons, he's still kind of struggling like he is right now. I could see that an option happening.
Well, James, I know you probably get asked this every day, and I know Sox fans talk about it basically daily, but let's talk about it realistically with Kopech and Jimenez, because I know you probably get asked this all the time when Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech will be brought up to the majors. So let's factor in service time and the quality of play they've had this season. When really do you think Kopech will be brought up, and then will Jimenez make it to the majors this year?
I would think Kopech is being a late July, August guy. I don't know why it's necessary to wait that long, but there are still development issues with him as far as just command, and the changeup has not really progressed as he would probably like. The curveball he's shown his last few starts probably makes it unnecessary to really worry about the changeup too much, because it achieves the same differential and velocity that what he really needs the changeup. But I think they're probably going to drag it out a bit more. Eloy Jimenez is probably going to be late August, September call-up. I would expect it more at this point. I would probably expect a lot sooner him to be sent to Charlotte, since they have both stated that it is necessary for him to kind of face the more breaking ball or in attacks that he would see handling the top-level prospect stuff you see at Double-A. He's really growing at Double-A at this point, because those pitchers can't even force him to take walks at this point. So I would think relatively soon we're going to see him go to Charlotte, since he doesn't really have much to prove left at Double-A anymore.
James Vegan, The Athletic, here with us on White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN. I saw some of your videos down when you were at Winston-Salem watching Dylan Cease. What impressed you most about Dylan?
I think it's pretty easy to be impressed by 99 miles an hour on the 103rd pitch of the night in the eighth inning. I mean, you see him and he's kind of a thin, lanky guy, but he's doing every bit the strong endurance and feats of strength that we talk about Kopech doing, and being able to maintain absolute top shelf velocity deep into games. And Dylan Cease is doing the same thing. It's against hitters who don't force him to have as sharp command as maybe Kopech is facing right now, but he's every bit as solid with the stuff and being able to maintain it late into games. And that's something that, people were kind of worried about with him even a couple, a month or two ago. His development has been, we'll see how smooth his delivery can get over time. And, when the strike zones get a little bit tighter as he goes up, whether he'll be able to adjust along with that. But as far as just the raw strength and power and stuff of his arm, it's there.
James, Machado mania was sweeping through Chicago. I don't think you were here for it as you were covering the minor league teams, but that's basically all anybody in Chicago, sports fans-wise, were talking about was Machado to the Cubs potentially in a trade, or maybe even the Sox signing him in the offseason. I've said that I think it's a slim shot they do land him in free agency, but I'm not completely dismissing the White Sox in the conversation for Machado. I mean, Rick Hahn's talked about making sort of that corner turning type move, that landmark signing to basically, move this rebuild along. So I guess my question is, what if you could put a percentage on it, or if you do you think Rick Hahn can persuade, and do you think the White Sox are ready to pony up that amount of money for Manny Machado this offseason?
I think they're probably willing to pony up more money than they've ever put up for any free agent target before. Whether that's going to actually beat out the max offers of extremely high revenue, deep pocket teams like the Yankees or Dodgers or Cubs. You know, I'm not entirely sold on that until it happens. And, you know, I think it's a unique opportunity to have somebody who fits in their window as much. I mean, you don't see 26-year-old free agents who are in the prime of their careers pop up every now and then. He's not an absolute perfect fit because that's a shortstop. And that's Anderson. I don't think they should ruin their chances with Machado for the sake of Tim Anderson, as high as I am on Anderson's future compared to other doubters. But it does present some complications that might prevent them from going absolute above and beyond. And they'll have to. I mean, they're going to have to overpay. That's the surcharge that you face from being a team that has not been a competitor and has not lured top talent, is that to really kind of bring them in. They're probably going to have to outbid every other team in the market by a significant margin. And, you know, they say that they're willing to do stuff like that, but they have to prove it before we really can, you know, put every amount of faith into their words.
James, appreciate you taking time on a Saturday night, and I really enjoy reading your stuff at The Athletic. You do a great job covering the team and covering the minor leagues as well. It's awesome that they sent you out to
Where are you now, James? Because you've been all over the place. Where are you currently as you talk to Carm and I right now?
I'm actually at home for once.
Back in Chicago. Good.
All right. Cleveland Sunday night.
Beautiful.
Good little Memorial Day in Cleveland, with a nice three-game set coming on with the Brewers. We'll see you out at Guaranteed Rate Field next weekend. And thanks for taking time tonight, James. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
James Fegan of The Athletic covering your Chicago White Sox.
If you are a White Sox fan, if you have any interest in the White Sox at all, The Athletic, James Fegan are must reads.
He had some really good stuff.
Great stuff. He's a great writer. He knows his stuff.
Yeah.
Fegan, even before he was with The Athletic, was all over the White Sox. So it's at J.R. Fegan on Twitter. Follow him. Read his stuff.
Say quick timeout. White Sox Weekly with you till 9. Jace Fry coming up after 8:30. 720 WGN.
Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field with the White Sox. Take on the Detroit Tigers on Saturday, June 16th. Be there, Carmen. 1:10 p.m. First 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox Hawaiian floppy hat.
Flat out yelling at me. Just screaming at me to
White
be
Sox
there.
Hawaiian floppy hat presented by Beggars Pizza. Love a little Beggars action. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. Now I want pizza.
And White Sox games, KP, are better with the group. Group events are perfect for clients or employees celebrating or fundraising. Bring your group out for specially priced tickets and a great experience. It's never too early to start planning your summer outing. For more information, call 312-674-1000 or visit WhiteSox.com. What are we going to hear with Jace Fry coming up here, KP? You sat down with him.
Good stuff with Jace Fry. Talk about, you know, he's been through two Tommy John surgeries, by the way. That's not easy. So some of that, talk about his hot streak. He went, what, 8 1/3, didn't go but hit or run this season. So maybe he's a guy that could be a part of the long-term future of the Sox bullpen. Jace Fry.
I mean, incredible start to the season. Yep. Not giving up runs, not giving up hits, and quite a journey, too, with the two Tommy Johns to get here. And Sox fans, one more reminder for you. Join us as the Sox take on the Cleveland Indians on Thursday, June 14th at 1:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans receive a free commemorative blackout game t-shirt. I was there. Presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park.
Vending?
And win big. No, maybe both. I can't remember. I was on the field interviewing. I interviewed Nick Swisher on the field after that one. I'll send you the audio. Purchase your tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. We'll get you an 8:30 news, and then Jace Fry is straight ahead. Your White Sox Weekly with you till 9 on 720 WGN.
The fans aren't sitting down. They're standing. They want this game over and call a White Sox winner, and so do we. No runs, two hits for the Rangers, 3-on-8 for the Sox, and Fry with another 3-2 pitch. Curveball got him, strike three. Sox win. Sox win. They win 3 out of 4 from the Texas Rangers. A two-hit shutout for White Sox pitching today.
Horrible timing on the cough and the mic turn on. I apologize to everyone out there listening.
That's all right.
I got an allergy thing. I don't know what's going on. That's Farmio on Jace Fry, who's been dominant to start the season. He's a lefty, and a lot of people are excited about him. I had a chance to talk to him. You're still laughing about my cough into the microphone. That was embarrassing. I hope management was not listening. I hope the White Sox management was also not listening. I apologize to our listening audience. I hope everybody out there is enjoying the Memorial Day weekend. It's absolutely beautiful outside, Carmen. Let's completely ignore me coughing into a microphone. Let's talk about good things, like Jay's Fry and his incredible start to the year.
Yeah, well, can we hold on.
Fine, let's highlight my cough.
No. I just want to take a just a breather. Okay. That was his first save of the year, Jay's Fry.
Yeah.
And you're having an allergy night. It's not
whatever it is. I've had a cough for like 2 weeks now.
No, you can't control it. It's all right. So you talked to Jace Fry. What are we going to hear here?
Jace Fry, you know, I think one of my favorite parts of the conversation was me kind of asking him about how the reliever has evolved over the past few years here. I mean, look at Andrew Miller with the Indians. We saw the Rays start a reliever 2 games in a row.
They're starting a reliever 3 games this weekend. Romo Friday and Sunday, and they started a different one today. And, they won.
We kind of dabble in that. We talk about his hot start. We talk about him having to deal with 2 Tommy John surgeries. So we'll kind of dive into a few different things with Jace Fry.
You know, obviously you've caught the eye of many with your stuff out of the pen and, of course, the numbers. Like, as I said, no hits, no runs. But let's get to know Jace Fry a little bit. You grew up in Beaverton, Oregon. I was reading that you played in the 2006 Little League World Series Championship. What was that like?
Oh yeah, that was it was awesome. You know, we had a great tight group of guys. We played together for a while, so going into that, it was a great experience.
And you're a 2-time Tommy John. You've had Tommy John twice. What's this whole journey been like for you? You go through 2 Tommy Johns. I'm sure some doubt has to creep in when you deal with that, and then the next thing you know, you're off to a great start, and you record your first career save just a week ago.
Yeah, you know, it took a lot of long days in the training room. You know, I made the training rooms my second home almost at this point. But, you know, a lot of monotonous work, but it was all worth it, you know, now that I'm here and in this situation, and it's been a great journey.
So what's working this season? Because it's been pretty much dominant stuff from you from the get-go.
It's my spin. You know, I'm spinning balls over the plate well, curveballs and sliders, and it seems like every time I do make a mistake, I make the right mistake. I miss across the plate, or I'm throwing a ball out of hand that ends up being a strike, or a strike out of my hand that ends up being a ball. And, you know, it's really just keeping the hitters off balance.
You know, this is a team that, you know, obviously you're new to the big leagues and everything, and you're a rookie in some sense, but this is a team that's obviously in a bit of a rebuild here. How much are you kind of dialed in with that? I know, you know, we think back to spring training, the amount of excitement that was in the clubhouse, because there is so much youthful talent up and down, you know, in the big league level and in the minors for this team. So for yourself, how much are you focused in, you know, individual growth, but also trying to, you know, envision yourself being a, you know, a part of the larger picture of this whole thing for the Sox?
Yeah, you know, there's just so much talent really at every level with the White Sox right now that, try not to get caught up in, you know, the prospects or the, you know, try to read too much about what's really going on. I just take it one day at a time, really, and try to, you know, make the most of every day and, you know, enjoy every day, especially while, you know, I'm in the big leagues. So that's my kind of outlook on what's going on with the White Sox. And I know as long as we perform and execute our pitches, you know, we'll have a great chance of staying up here.
Obviously, the wins and losses aren't where you guys would like them to be this year. But for you personally, how fun has this been, this first month or two of this season?
You know, it's been a great start. I couldn't even imagine it before the year started that I'd come out throwing the ball this well. And, you know, I'm really just rolling with it, just trying to ride the wave. And it's still sometimes I'm looking at what's going on and just laugh about it sometimes, because I know, you know, baseball happens and it's going to happen. But right now I'm just really enjoying every day.
Well, we look at the way relievers are being used in Major League Baseball these days. We saw the Rays, you know, start a game with a reliever, back-to-back games. We've seen guys like Andrew Miller kind of redefining what a reliever can be. How much are you focused in on that? How much are you dialed into that? What do you think of the evolution of the reliever?
It's crazy because you can really use them for matchups at any time now. There's, you know, and a long time ago, they used to throw their best reliever in whenever it mattered most in the game. Whenever they were in a pinch, they would, you know, they'd throw that so-called closer in the game. And we're kind of seeing it's, you know, kind of circling back to where they're trying to get their best matchups in at any possible time. And it's kind of crazy to see it working, but it's also watch.
Yeah, I asked you the other day after you recorded that save if you want the closer job, and you know, you said it will let it play itself out and things like that. And I realized there probably is much pride for relievers in becoming a closer because you are, you know, held to a higher standard. You're in a very important spot. But in many ways, being like a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth guy, that you know, the fire extinguisher to come in and put out the flames when they're brewing out there. That's got to be something for a reliever, right? I mean, I realize that the closer is sort of the pedestal of everything, but being the guy that comes in those emergency situations, that's got to mean something to relievers now more so than probably 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because you know you can alter a game, you know, one pitch in that moment with runners on, and you know we're usually coming in with runners on, get out of a pinch or get out of a jam. And you know, even if we're coming in for, say, a starter who struggled, if you could hold them there and keep our team, you know, within range, it's going to change the rest of the game. So, you know, being a middle relief to bridge guy or, you know, back-end guy, it's all important. And obviously you want a closer who can just, you know, shut the door on righties and lefties.
Is there another reliever in Major League Baseball right now that you say, whether you emulate or a guy that you say maybe is a comparison to your style of pitching?
I'm searching for, because, you know, a lot of lefties have four-seam slider, or they have really good sinker slider, and a lot of the starters kind of have the stuff that I have coming out of the bullpen, but, you know, I'm still looking. But that definitely not going to change what I got, that's for sure.
Right. What's the relationship with Coop been? Because, of course, he's been around for a long time. What have you learned from him, and how have you liked pitching under Coop?
I kind of think of Coop as, you know, the guy who he set the stone. So now every with before him has kind of, you know, reiterated what Coop thinks, you know. So I feel as though even though when I was in the minor leagues and working my way up, I was still kind of working with Coop. That makes sense. But being with him here, it's just, you know, he's kind of letting me do my own thing right now. You know, don't touch it if it ain't broke kind of thing.
How have the and you know, going back to kind of this rebuild process, how has the attitude in the clubhouse been this year among, you know, with some struggles on the field happening, but of course there's been some bright spots. How has the clubhouse handled it for the most part? I know there are a few veteran guys like James Shields or Jose Abreu or kind of those veteran statures in the clubhouse.
I mean, I think that, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Jace.
I think everyone's, you know, they're doing great because we know we're competing. You know, we're not out here trying to lose. We're competing, and we can see that within one another. And, you know, it seems that a few wins, you know, are now coming our way, and the energy's really picking up. And hopefully we can just keep riding the energy because, you know, a winning clubhouse is always a happier clubhouse.
That's Chase Fry, the White Sox reliever, 24-year-old, who has yet to give up a hit or a run this season, off to an impressive start. And you got a lot of Sox fans excited, Jace, I'll tell you that much, because, you know, on social media, when you're pitching, people are excited. Seeing the stuff you have is nasty, and I think people are starting to envision you within in the larger picture of things. So keep it up. Congrats on the early success here, and hopefully we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Jace Fry. He has given up a couple of hits, by the way. We talked to him
a few
days ago.
You flat out cursed Jace Fry.
I jinxed it, but no runs. No runs. That's all that matters.
He's had a great year. Hopefully he can continue on here. Let's, great job, KP. Way to get the sit down,
baby. Thanks for allowing me to get some real estate there on your White Sox Weekly show. Appreciate it.
It was most definitely mine and Dan Long, who's doing an outstanding job producing the program's pleasure. Let's come on back here. And Steve Stone had some interesting things to say about Wellington Castillo, who got suspended this week for 80 games, and the reality of what's going on in baseball, because he's not the only guy that's been put, you know, has had these level of suspensions. Robinson Cano, who was headed to the Hall of Fame until he wasn't, this happened this year as well. So Stoney's got something interesting straight ahead on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly rolling on till 9 o'clock. The Nocturnal Journal, Dave Hoekstra, warming up in the bullpen.
I wonder what his favorite thing to eat at Guaranteed Rate Field is. Dan Long, we didn't even ask you. What's your favorite thing at Guaranteed Rate Field? You a Polish sausage with onions guy?
Yeah, any sort of tubed meat I'm down for. I do like a Polish grilled onions, mm-hmm. hot dog grilled onions. It's all good with me. Mm. Sometimes you go, you know, raw onions if you're mustard, neon green relish if you're going Chicago style.
I hear you.
Dan Long, it's very enjoyable to see him come out to a guaranteed rate field covering some games, asking Ricky Renteria questions. He's been doing a great job. It's been good to see you out there when KP takes a night off. Hey, one more time with Steve Stone, as we teased before the break here. Steve Stone on with Steve Cochran, and I asked him about Wellington Castillo, and we just continue to see this. Why are guys making these decisions, taking these risks? And Stoney bottom-lined it pretty well.
Well, one of the things, and the reason why it's happening, and understand something, when you see a PED suspension, almost without exception, you're not seeing it for human growth hormone or steroids. What you're seeing it for are the masking agents. And the test has gotten a whole lot better for masking agents over the last few years, so they're catching more guys. Also, you can always use, when you're using a masking drug, you can always use the excuse, well, hey, it was prescribed to me, I had no idea. Well, they do have an idea. There's 76 ways to be violated in the Major League Drug Testing Program, 76 different compounds that will violate you. And everybody should know, and if they don't, there is then a massive lawsuit against the doctor who says he knows what violates you and then gives you something that does that. One of them are diuretics, and the other is testosterone. And that's what they're testing for. They're testing for a number of other, the masking agents. So where you're not going to see steroids per se or human growth hormone per se, you're going to see the masking agents used. And that's how they're catching guys. It was diuretics with Cano. I'm not sure exactly what it is with Castillo. But they do have the excuse, well, I didn't know. I didn't know that I was taking this. Well, they all know. You generally know what you're putting in your body. And you run the risk. And I think, Mark, you're right when you say sometimes, you know, in the case of Castillo, just look at that. $6 million contract, he loses about 2.4. That leaves him 3.6 that he still is making, which is a pretty handsome sum by anybody's estimation. With Cano, it's a lot different, but he's making, you know, over $20 million a year, so he loses 80, and he's still making a great deal of money. But a lot of guys take away the stars. We're having a lot of minor leaguers do it because they're not quite good enough, and they think this will put them over the top. So they take a gamble. You know, I'm not excusing this, but if you're raised in the Dominican Republic and you have nothing and your family has yep. nothing, and you take a look at a way to get something, you would say you would trade anything for that. And the fact is, with steroids, you can get testicular atrophy, you can get pancreatic cancer. Fortunately, I could read, and when I looked at the downside, it wasn't for me. But for guys who have absolutely nothing, you say, okay, I get a chance to take care of me, my family, and my family's family down the road. I'll take a gamble at it, because when you're a youngster, you're immortal. And unfortunately, these guys, they look at it, and they say, I don't have anything, I'll take a shot at it. A lot of guys make the major leagues, and understand something, for every guy in the major leagues, the ripple effect is there's another guy who doesn't get there. Feel bad for the other guy who doesn't get right. there, because 30% of the league is probably cheating. And again, you know, you can't excuse the behavior, you can understand it. And that's the way baseball has gone.
30% of the league is probably cheating.
That's from Stone Pony. He dishes it out.
30% is a big number. That is, I'll do the math for you.
He's right, though. I mean, look at it. You got a chance to make you get one big contract, right? Let's say you get a $20 million contract. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Someone from the Dominican, from Venezuela, wherever it may be, $20 million for anybody, that's huge.
I got a question for the two of you then.
Yeah. Okay.
If the estimate is 30% of Major League Baseball players
That's Steve Stone's estimate, but go ahead.
Yeah. If the estimate is 30%, what are you going to do? Because clearly, saying that it's a banned substance and we're going to fine you or suspend you for games hasn't gotten the message across.
Right.
So what do you do?
Right.
What's next?
I mean, that's the point Stone was kind of making. It's like, yeah, you may lose a couple million dollars on salary when you do get the suspension, but Robinson Cano got a $150-200 million contract. Who cares? Well, it's worth it. So I guess what you would do, I guess the only thing I could recommend to say is continue to make harsher and stricter punishments.
Yeah. When you're asking, what are you going to do? Who are you talking about, David? What is Major League Baseball going to do?
What's Major League Baseball going to do? What's every professional sport going to do this is just a sign, I guess, of a basic attitude that says, you know, it's okay to get a little help.
Okay, well, if you really, really, really want to stop it, one and done. You get caught, you're done. Not 80 games, not 1 year, not multiple opportunities.
Yeah, but what if it's Mike Trout? You tell Mike Trout he can't play in baseball anymore?
Right.
Best player in baseball can't play anymore?
Well, and
what if it's Bryce Harper? You telling Bryce Harper? Nope. How much does that negative? That's huge. That's money. That's marketing.
So in other words, at the end of the day, the bottom line is
money, like everything.
Money.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose out on the potential to make more money because we've got star players. Okay.
No, I was just taking it to an extreme. I'm saying, like, let's say
it may not be as extreme an idea as you think. Because what are they doing now?
I think they would rather admit that, yes, one of our best players cheated and still have them in the game, rather than, yes, one of our best players cheated and he's no longer going to be playing.
They certainly want, and Jennings, we appreciate you jumping in here. We got to get to your news on time here. But the baseball wants to make it look like they're trying to stop this at bare minimum.
Optics, PR, marketing.
We have the toughest testing program. They talk about this all the time, and they are catching guys. But if they really, really, really wanted to stop, one and done, you're out, you're not coming back. But some of the biggest names in the history of the game have fallen under the steroids umbrella. And Robinson Cano is another huge one. Wellington Castillo, not that big of a name. Matters to the White Sox, but again, he's making a ton of dough, took a risk, and he got cut. And it hurts him, and it hurts the Sox, but he's still going to come out okay on the back end of it. And we don't have enough time to get fully in this. I don't really think fans care.
I think people are that way. I really do. I've talked to people who are like, look, I grew up through the steroid era. I'm just sort of jaded to it. It's just whatever.
Don't care. Not interested. Whatever.
Better or worse.
I'll root for him when he gets back. Starling Marte of the Pirates got a standing ovation when he came back after an 80-game switch. They were thrilled.
Look, I've long stood my stance on this. Yes, I hate it. It feels dirty, whatever. Barry Bonds is still one of the best baseball players of all time. So that'll tell you how I feel about the whole thing.
What? Thank you very much. White Sox Weekly. We'll wrap it up coming on back here, 720 WGN.
So we've concluded it is the Polish sausage with onions, the greatest food item at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Hello, Tace. Got some thank yous tonight. Charlie Tilson, Jace Fry, James Fegan of The Athletic, Steve Stone, who joined Cochran, joined us. So we'll say thank you
to
Stone.
Cochran's giving away a pickup truck. Did you hear about that?
Yes.
You giving up a Chevy pickup truck.
You listen at 720 on 720. That's how you get involved with that. Dave Hoekstra is coming up, and we'll get you ready for White Sox and Tigers tomorrow after one more quick little timeout, 720 WGN.